And well, he always did, no windup. Huh? He didn't have nothing. He always warmed up pretty good. He was always around the plate. And
that was his moment of glory. I mean, he wasn't really that great a pitcher.
No. He had been knocked out earlier in the series, right. The second game. And they brought him back. And, he always gave Turner credit for that, I guess, bringing him back, because Casey listened to Turner. So that was it. And we Larson and I were pretty good friends. We had a few beers together. And we'd sit in the bullpen, he'd come down there after. And he'd been over here a few times. And we'd correspond. And he's different. He was a great guy, great character.
Now, in 55, what do you remember about the catch, Amoros' catch?
Yeah, I know. He was playing Yogi out of position. Yogi very seldom ever played to hit a ball in the air to left field. And he, if anything, you play him to pull. And he very seldom hit a fly ball to the opposite field. He made a hell of a catch. I mean, he was there. I don't know why he was playing there. Maybe, But that was a turnaround play, too. Got the double play, doubled up McDougal.
Can you remember any other great moments? I tried to pick out the big ones, but there might be some I forgot.
Playing in a World Series. Played one game out of the seven. That was the second game of the 49 series.
Now, why did you get to play in the World?
Well, because Yogi had, he had recovered from the busted thumb. He didn't come back until I got hurt in Boston a weekend before the season ended, and then they brought Hauk back from Kansas City, and then Yogi got back in the lineup. But Preacher Rowe was a left-hander, so I started the second game, and I had hit 315 that year. I got my playing time, most of my playing time that year.
I didn't ask you about Mickey.
Oh, man. Well, I roomed with Mickey. They put me rooming with him. Good kid. Drove back and forth the last couple of years I was there. I carpooled, and I would drive most of the time. My car looked like been through a sandstorm, or a bunch of kids had played on the hood, because they had those fountain pens in those days, and they would... Mickey, I would get the car and drive up in front of Yankee Stadium, and then he'd see me, and they'd keep come running out, and they'd challenge the car, and then they'd flip the ink on it or scratch my car. Well, the same kids would be there, because they're always looking for an autograph, and then they'd sell it to the tourists. Same kids every day.
Well, I grew up in Connecticut, and I remember in the 60s, the late 60s, when the Yankees were terrible. We used to wait out, and they had actually players' parking lot, which was fenced in.
Yeah, well, ours wasn't fenced in.
Yeah,
we would park right in front of the stadium. Yeah. I mean, down in the first baseline, like where the entrance was. But they let us park there. We'd back it in, but there wasn't fence. I think they put it across the street and they fenced it in.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't. I mean, and so Mickey would wait in. Inside, and then he would come running out, and when I drew alongside, and he'd get in there.
Right.
But I remember when he was just, he couldn't have been any more than 23 or 24 years old then. And after a doubleheader, he'd take that, he'd take this leg and he'd move it, put it out on the passenger side, and then he'd take the other one, stand up, walk up, see you tomorrow. Okay, Mick. Never great hustler.
Do you think that they overdid his thing about his lifestyle and how he said his dad died young and he figured he was going
to
die young?
Well, that might have had a lot to do with it.
Partying.
Yeah.
What was it like going out with him in New York?
Well, I didn't go out with him in New York per se as much. I just roomed with him on the road a couple of times. More or less, he was a young guy and I was a veteran and. We won the championship. We won the pennant in Philly that one night, and I think it was his first year that I was rooming with him. And so we got back to the room, and we'd had a couple of drinks, and then he said, I got to call my mom in Oklahoma. Well, God, we got a party line there, and finally it was about 12 o'clock at night. We finally did get through to his mother. Yeah, he was, Mickey was all right. He played hard. But, you know, guys like Hank Bauer, Mascaren, myself to an extent, Joe Collins, McDougal, you know, gave him a little guidance.
I only got a couple more questions. There's stuff come out recently about 1951 with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and that they say that they stole the sign, and that's how Bobby Thompson hit the home run. Were you ever involved in any sign stealing?
Sign stealing? I was back, what was it, for the, they had a bunch of Dodgers, Giants, and players back, not two or three years ago. And Sal Ebars was there. He's the guy who was giving the sign. You see, in the Polo Grounds, the bullpens were on the field. They were in left center, which was about 480 feet away, way out there. And they could give the signs. And there's been different, Cleveland, Chicago, they would give the, Chicago would give the signs on the catcher's number, on Lawler's number 10. They would let, put guys out in the bleachers. Cleveland did the same. Eddie Bachman, who I was with last night, would go out there in Cleveland and give the signs.
I talked to a catcher who didn't play much. You might not know him. Named Kuno Berrigan.
Berrigan, yeah, I know.
And he's claimed he was out in the at Wrigley up there stealing signs. And what they would do is there was an exit sign, and they would turn it on and off to signal back.
Yeah, that's
He said Hank Sauer knew they were doing it and tried to get up there. And they propped the door closed, and he was banging on there, saying, "Damn it, Kuno, I know you're in there stealing signs." So, well, did you ever?
Oh, Hank Sauer. Yeah, Kuno was playing with Hank.
But I think Nick, maybe I have it wrong.
No, Hank was with the Cubs, and Kuno went. Oh well, Hank. I don't know. Oh well, Hank could have been with the Giants.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, all right.
The next year.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you ever suspect when you were catching that the guy,
well,
was a runner,
you know, the the guys on the base runner sometimes. Williams was great at the Red Sox do that. You'd have to wait until he, looked at the fielder to see where he was. We knew what was going on.
Did you ever get a sign given to you? Stolen sign? Somebody telling you what was going to come?
Bob Turley was one of the best sign stealers from the pitchers that I've ever seen. And one day I heard him talking to Mantle and Yogi and Bauer about who's going to pitch that day and what he did, with his glove. And I heard him, I was going to play that day. And I said, "Hey, Bob, how about me? Why don't you let me in?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, we can't give him the Yogi Lala to get traded any minute. We can't give away our secrets." Billy had a few ways of, he used to go checking. I remember I went with Lolich up to Detroit when I was a coach. Went up to the scoreboard up there. And in Texas, he had different ways of checking. He tried to wire the catcher and the coaches. And Billy did a lot of things to help win, And they said, "Well, that's not fair." Well, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But everybody's been doing a little bit cheating in baseball for a long time. Not everybody I'm talking about. Get the
water down the baselines. Bill Beck used to move the
You'd go into Cleveland there, and it hadn't rained for weeks, and you go in there, and the water, in front of the plate were Lemon and Garcia and Wynn and those guys. Slow down the infielder because their infielders didn't have much range.
Well, they said the Yankees did that during the World Series, this last one, to slow down Juan Pierre. Let the hoses run.
The White Sox park, like the kid, you roll the ball down there. What Nelly Fox used to bunt a lot, and the other guy, left-handed hitter Rivera, Jim Rivera. You go in there before, like you're going to take infield, and you roll the ball down the third baseline, out in the foul line, and just roll back in. That bats. You know, the ground kid. Then they'd lower the mounds. Different guys like different heights. So, you know, in those days.
What was your relationship with umpires? Did you ever get thrown out of a game? Or did you, when you were catching, did you ever talk to them?
Very seldom. The one time I tell this story is when Williams was, I'm catching in Boston, and there was a fellow that, Bill McGowan, they called number one. He'd been around a long time. He was a grouchy old guy, but he was a good, give you a good ball and strike effort, you know. So Williams is hitting one day, and now he knows that it's not Yogi catching. He knows that, he doesn't know, I said, probably a rookie, so you never, you were told, don't ever turn around, don't ever say anything bad to him, you know. So one day I was free, and when we had Williams, I had a strike, and I said, he built a pretty good pitch, and he says, throw the ball back, you bush son of a bitch. They came to see him hit, not you catch.
Did you ever get in any fights on the field?
No.
No.
No, not did I negotiate? I mean, did I get anyone started? No, I think that was the worst thing you could do because Mr. Weiss didn't want any troublemakers like that. I mean, if they threw at me, I would say, yeah, throw at me. Let's get the bombers up here. You're just doing
setting the table.
You're doing us a great service by not getting me out and by hitting me. Retaliation, you know.
When you batted, who did you bat behind usually?
I hit ace. Coleman.
Richardson.
No, Richardson was up and down there. He never stayed. He didn't come to stay until about 57, 58 maybe. 58. Behind, whoever. Let's see, who the hell would I have? Coleman. Probably Jerry would hit 7th. I did 8th. That was about it, yeah.
And so then, after your coaching, you became a scout for the Florida Marlins? What do you do for Florida, or what did you do for Florida?
Oh, I was a scout. Yeah, well, let's see. You see, after 68, 60, oh, I took a job scouting with the Washington Senators expansion club in the early 60s. And then when Billy got the job in 69 with the Twins, that's when he brought me back as a coach. And then I spent that time with him until 75, which was the last year I was in uniform with Texas. And we got fired then. Of course, you know, when he got fired at noon, I got fired at 12:01. Martin.
It
was like a raid on a whorehouse. A piano player went too, you know.
Did they fire the whole staff? The whole coaching staff?
No, just Fowler and I would go.
He loved Art Fowler. Art Fowler was his guy with the A's.
Right. And that, of course, we were his guys, you know. Of course, the other Cub had the option of they had to have some housemen, you know, coaches.
And then, so when did you start?
After the 75, then I went back to scouting with the Atlanta Braves. Bill White was there and Eddie Robinson.
I interviewed Bill.
Oh, Bill, yeah. Bill and I
in Sacramento. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I interviewed him.
Well, I was catching him the day we were semi-pro and when Dave Pearl Harbor was bombed.
Wow.
I've known him for... God.
They said he had a great move, kickoff move.
Best in baseball, ever.
What a nice man, too. Great guy.
Yeah, so anyway, that's right. I was... I got with Atlanta, and then, of course, then was... Atlanta.
So you were the Cubs.
Milwaukee.
Cubs, Milwaukee. A's.
Yeah. And I was with Cincinnati last year. I'm with the Cubs now.
Now, is that a World Series ring for Florida?
This is the Florida. Not yet. That was 97.
Wow.
Look at the
difference. So not only did you win.
Difference between the Yankees.
Yeah. Oh.